This is Booth 46, live from Petorino's. Not just in the heart of the Loop, but the heart of the Loop. Surrounded by theater, culture, and Chicago's movers and shakers. Each episode brings you, as Irv Kupcinet used to say,
the lively art of conversation.
Local vibes, real conversations, and fresh ideas for experiencing the city. So pull up a chair, lean in, and let's dive into the stories that shape Chicago.
It's another Booth 46 podcast from Petorino's Restaurant. And we are celebrating, and celebrating is the right word, the Chicago Film Festival, which has been around for a very long time. In fact, so long that this is the 61st annual International Film Festival of Chicago. Sam Fletcher is here from the film festival, but we also have two movie makers, one of which may soon be walking a red carpet in Hollywood, and we'll introduce both of them in a moment. I want to talk about the film festival first, Sam. This is exciting, 61 years. What is different about it this year? I know Spike Lee is coming in.
Spike Lee is definitely coming in. He's going to be doing, we're doing an evening with Spike Lee, so he's going to be talking for, I think, an hour and a half about his life and his
basketball.
Work and his basketball. I want to get some Knicks questions in there for sure.
Yes.
He's also showing Highest to Lowest, which is his most recent film. So he's here for a screening, here for a talk. We're really excited to have him. This year, I mean, it's different every year. So the 61st Festival is unique because of the lineup. Like, there's new films every year. Everything we show is from this past year in cinema. So it's all 2025 movies. And they're from around the world. So we have over 70 countries represented in the lineup this year. So a little bit of something for everybody, I would say.
Certainly. And international is a proper word. How many nations?
I think it's 70 countries throughout the lineup represented. Yeah, so 70 countries.
Well, I'll tell you, right now we need something to bring people together. And movies really can do that. And sitting right here at Booth 46, Sven Bressner. I didn't say that exactly right, did I, or did I?
Not exactly, but almost. Sven Bresser. Bresser, yeah.
Okay, close enough, I guess.
Yeah.
And James Choi is here. James, you represent South Korea, and Sven, you represent, what country is it?
It's the Netherlands.
Yes, okay. So, your movie, Reedland, may actually be nominated, you're smiling, for an Academy Award?
It could be, yeah. We're the submission for, the Dutch submission for this year's international feature film, so yeah. To be honest, I don't know if we make a chance, but who knows?
Well, it's not out of the blue. You were selected for Critics Week at the Cannes Film Festival in France. That's quite an honor right there. What is your movie about?
It's about a man whose existence and daily life is very much connected to nature, and this relations gets disrupted because he finds a body of a murdered and raped girl on his land. He's a reed farmer.
Oh no!
And
he ends up in court.
He doesn't. No. He finds the body and he gets alienated from his surroundings and from daily life and goes looking for answers and goes looking for evil in many different ways. Yeah.
And at the very beginning, I need to ask you this: he builds all these fires. What is that for? But you know, because farmers here don't do that, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, so it's a daily routine, a daily ritual that all reed farmers do.
They what kind of farmers did you say?
It's reed farmers, reed cutters. Actually,
explain what that is.
So reed is a vegetation. You maybe know it. It's a grass type that grows where water and land meet, and you hatch it for roofs.
Oh, okay.
So they cut it, and then in the reeds there's still bushes that had to get taken out, and you burn the bushes. It's like waste. It's like cutting waste. And every day in the morning and the evening, you burn this bushes. It's a very daily and mundane ritual for these people.
All right. And James, tell us what your movie Before the Call is about.
Sure. Before the Call is about a Korean-American who ends up going back to Korea to enlist in the military. We have a mandatory military service in Korea, and so he doesn't have to go back, but he goes back to try to sort of contend with this idea of belonging and duty more than sort of going for heroism. And he goes back in the midst of this sort of global conflict that's happening that places a lot of sort of pressure on sort of the decision he's about to make.
I was hoping for one of those slapstick comedies. Neither one of you does that, do you? Neither one has that. I want to ask you the most important question I could ask all three of you, and that is, Sven, I'll start with you. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Stella Artois. Not very regional, maybe a bit boring since I'm from Europe and it's a Belgian beer, but it's my favorite lager, actually, so I just picked it.
So here's a dream of mine. And you can follow me with a camera if I do it and make a movie from it. I want to go to Belgium and drink every beer they have. I love Belgian beers.
Yeah,
I mean, I truly do.
It depends how long you're there or how fast you drink, how much time you need till you can have all the beers. It's a lot in Belgium. They're good beers, yeah.
They are good beers. The percent of alcohol is not small, however, right?
It depends. This is just a normal
that.
Percent.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
But you have strong beers. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one called Duval, and I am told that translates to
devil.
Yes, you know.
Yeah, it's also one of my favorites. Like my second
one of mine
favorite.
Too.
That one is a little bit more dangerous.
It translates to
devil.
Yeah, that explains everything. I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
James, what are you drinking?
I'm having an old fashioned.
Which is one of my favorites.
Pretty classic, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the Italian version, though, I hear, in Petrino.
Yeah, Petrino's does it well. And what are you drinking there, Sam?
I'm bringing the excitement with a sparkling water.
Woohoo! That's okay. You're on the clock now, so is that why?
I have a reputation as being really flashy, so I'm trying to tone it down.
Or tone it up, depending on how not flashy you are,
right.
I suppose. All right, James, want to get back to your movie. So at one point, they're talking about something and they're going through old memorabilia, and there's a song playing in the background. Remember, this is happening in Korea, and the song you chose is a song called Sailing by Christopher Cross.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because that must not be, I would think, it is not a typical song that you'd hear in South Korea on the radio. Why did you choose that?
Well, it actually would be playing in South Korea. I mean,
really?
his dad is, you know, from an older generation, probably fought in the Korean War.
Sailing doesn't go back that far.
No, it doesn't go back that far. Yeah. But I think there was a huge Western influence, obviously, of rock and roll and American music in Korea that still sort of seeped through for older generations.
So if I'm in South Korea and turn on the radio, a music station.
Yeah.
I'm likely to hear American music like that?
Well, maybe. I mean, the implication there is he's playing a record. But they might have American stations for sure. I mean, there's a lot of American influences. I mean, we're still stationed there.
And why did you choose that song? I mean, and broader speaking, when you're putting a movie together and saying, this is the music that I want.
Sure.
Why do you make the choices you make?
Yeah, I mean, I just imagine a man who, again, is Western influenced. I think that style of music, yacht rock, as they call it, from
they
the
call
70s.
It what?
Yacht rock.
Mm-hmm. Yacht rock?
Yeah.
Because it's about sailing?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily because it's about sailing, that song. I mean, I think it's a genre of songs.
It plays well when you're on a yacht. That's the kind of stuff you put on.
Really?
With a cocktail like this, right?
Yeah, with a cocktail like this.
Drinking Italian old-fashioned.
With a small swimming pants on.
Yeah. And it's such an iconic song. It just fit the mood, and I imagine that character, that dad, having that influence from the 50s going into the 60s and 70s, that would be a song that he would listen to. I mean, that's a song I listen to. That's a song a lot of people listen to, so it's a very popular song, and I just thought that it fit the mood and would be something that the character would listen to.
A performer by the name of Alan Stone actually just did a cover of that song, and it's doing very, very well, incidentally. So your timing happens to be very nice for that. When you make movies, Sven, a lot of them, as I researched what you do a bit, nature is a part of a lot of them. Am I right about that?
Yeah, at least in two, three films, it's very important, yeah.
Why? Is there a broader message, or is there a personal love you have of nature?
I myself grew up in a small village surrounded by reed land, so I was always...
Is this kind of your story, in a way?
It's not.
Or somebody you know?
No, I mean, there was this... There was a discovering of a body of a murdered and raped woman just outside of my village. But actually, this is not the main inspiration. I really just tried to make a film about nature, about the rituals connected to nature, and about the human nature of this man we follow. So I think this mirroring of a landscape and an inner landscape is something I try to explore in already some films that I make. And also in this film, it's... This exploration goes the most deep, maybe, to say it like that. Yeah.
What is your ultimate goal with the movie? To have people see it?
If it has been seen, you mean?
No. Your goal is to have more and more people see it? I suppose that you could say, well, my goal is to win an Oscar, an Academy Award.
Yeah.
But I have a hunch that's not what you set out to do when you made the movie.
No, it's always, I think it's a very interesting question, but hard to answer. What's your goal? Why do you make this thing? I think about it quite a lot, and my answers changes through the years, but maybe just to share my imagination and to get control over my imagination and share that control, yeah. But maybe if you ask in a couple of months, I have already a different answer to that. So.
All right, we'll have you back in a couple of months, yeah. I suppose. So, James... You're a teacher. You teach at DePaul.
Yes.
You like to mentor others?
For sure, yeah.
Why? How?
Well, I mean, I think it's just the idea of just continuing to pass on sort of the knowledge and is just part of the arts.
Did you have a mentor?
No, actually, I didn't.
You wish you did.
I wish I did, and I think that's maybe what I'm trying to pass along. Yeah.
What is the magic of having one of those?
A mentor?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, experience. The process of, you know, somebody going before you that has gone through many of the experiences and passing along sort of the best practices and knowledges that come with that. So, yeah.
So we have two filmmakers here. We have someone who must see 5,000 movies every year. So I'm curious for the three of you what your favorite movies are. But before we hear that answer... I want to tell you where we are. That's at Pettorino's Restaurant. And you talk about Italian food, you talk about fine dining, but not all that crazy fancy. You're talking about Pettorino's. How authentic is it? Well, I actually happen to know some people from Italy actually come here because it reminds them of home. And we're talking about everything from buttery garlic, calabrese shrimp, to crispy pizza con prosciutto. That means pizza with prosciutto. Very fancy, right? They have lots and lots of other things on the menu as well. Short ribs. That's my personal favorite, I think. Not to mention the drink menu, which changes all the time. Now, if it is warm enough outside, and we can't guarantee how long that is going to continue to be in Chicago... Outdoor seating will continue to happen with heaters out there if you like, and it's dog friendly, which is a good thing too. Pettorino's Restaurant, try the new Panuzzo, Chicago's new number one sandwich made with fresh, it's made fresh daily, everything here is, and it's made with double baked pizza dough and delicious fillings, $6 wines, that's Pettorino's Restaurant! Woo! And when you guys sat down, you said, I think this is a legendary place in Chicago. And if it sounds like a commercial, it's supposed to. I just did a commercial. But it is a legendary place in Chicago. Okay, Sam, your favorite movie ever?
Favorite movie ever? It's a difficult question, so this answer changes a lot, but I'd have to say it's Robert Bresson's L'Argent. It's L'Argent, it means money is the translation, but it's not often translated. It's usually referred to as L'Argent, and it's about the corrupting power of money and capitalism.
Where's the movie from?
It's from France. He's a legendary French filmmaker. It's a very angry film. I like films that sort of belie or provoke really strong emotions, so it is a really visceral experience to watch this film. It's my favorite.
James?
Yeah, I mean, again, echoing Sam, I think that's a tough question that changes. So I'll tell you the most sort of recent film, or films that have had sort of an influence, at least in making my film, and I would say that those two would be After Sun and Zone of Interest, probably, most recently.
Tell me about those movies.
After Sun's a father-daughter.
People can write them down, I'm sure.
Sure.
And find them on Netflix or wherever.
Yeah. After Sun's a meditative sort of piece about a father-daughter relationship. And Zone of Interest is sort of a broader commentary on sort of society and us looking at sort of these horrific tragedies that are happening and sort of what our roles are, what our roles in sort of observation or place it, when that is happening, and places that back on us to question.
Sven?
It's going to be a repetition what they said, but I'm going to pick a film that is also influencing my filmmaking for the last couple of years, and that is The Tree of the Wooden Clock by Ermanno Olmi.
Now you're shaking your head. Yes, you've seen this movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, Olmi's sure.
Amazing. Yeah.
Okay.
An Italian filmmaker.
Okay.
Yeah. Italian filmmaker who makes a film about a peasant community in what is it? Late 40s, I think the story is situated in, but it's shot later. It's about daily life, about daily rituals, but also about the oppression of this class system that was very present in Italy in that time. And it's a very courageous film, made with a lot of courage, I think.
So it's interesting, those choices that you make. First of all, none of you chose Superman. None of you chose an Avenger movie. Does it drive you crazy when some of those movies draw and make millions and millions and millions of dollars and no one goes to see... I don't honestly know the movies you're talking about. Now I will know because I will go back and watch those, but does that bother you at all, Sam?
I wouldn't say it bothers me specifically. I think those movies have different audiences, and I don't necessarily think it's a one or the other situation. So I think as advocates of a certain kind of cinema, especially these older films, many of us, the three of us mentioned older films, it's our jobs to
older films, like the
L'Argent is made in 1984.
Uh-huh.
The Tree of the Wooden Clog, I don't know what year it is,
in the late 60s, I think.
Maybe. Okay, yeah. That is an older film.
By
my definition, 1984 doesn't go back that far. But go ahead.
Yeah, so I think as advocates of non-commercial cinema, we just need to do a good job of putting the word out about these movies, especially if you come to events like the Chicago International Film Festival, you can see this kind of cinema. We just need to continue spreading the word. I think you'll notice if you attend the Chicago Film Festival that the audience for this kind of cinema is rabid and enthusiastic, and they show up in droves. So there are places for these movies.
Absolutely true. And now we can get it in our own living room, and something that you cannot get in your living room, Pederino's peppermint ice cream. Oh, wow. This will... Now, you guys, you need to know, you should make a movie about this ice cream. It is that good. It really is. You have now, when you have a spoonful, you'll tell me.
Oh, yeah.
If it's, yeah, you got something a little different.
I got the mango.
You got mango, okay.
Lucky me.
Yeah, well, you said no peppermint for me, and I understand that. That's not a problem.
I can put it here.
So, commercial movies, yeah, you're talking about that, but we have more places, and do both of you agree that it's a good thing, or do you think, maybe not? That people in their own living room can watch, ultimately, your movies, right?
Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I do miss the idea of community and people going to theaters. And I do think that there's going to be a sort of change in that. It's weird because we think about movies like Marvel movies and we think, well, those are the movies you go see in theaters. But in actuality, the movies we're talking about are actually a more fuller experience when you actually go see it in a theater with a community and sort of have this attention, the force have this sort of span to slow down. Those big movies, I think you can watch at home. So I think that trend's going to reverse to some degree as sort of, you know, we reevaluate what the whole film industry is about, I think, right now. But, yeah.
James, when I watch your work and I watch your movie Before the Call, I feel like I'm in the room with those people. Was that the goal?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm
very intimate.
Yeah, it's totally. I'm a firm believer in doing the most you can with the least possible, and that reflects sort of the budget as well. So I'm a big believer in master shots and working off of masters, and I think that also provides this opportunity where we're in a room with people, and you can't really leave, and you feel like you're part of that moment. I think it creates intimacy for the actors and the audiences. And it's, you know, we're so used to things being cut up so frequently. It definitely gives us sort of a jarring view to sort of sit back and be in the room with them. So that was totally intentional.
Funny you said cut up, because I was just going to ask Sven, your movie has a very different feel to it. Your movie Reedland, you're viewing things from the outside in, but it seems that a lot of the quote-unquote action was done in one take. Is that the case? It doesn't seem cut up anyway.
Yeah, also a lot of scenes are... Yeah, there are some shots in it that are 3 minutes long. Without,
right, that's what I mean, yeah.
Without cutting and...
Well, you never see that.
Yeah, you see it, but not so much in a Marvel film, maybe. But you can... you see it in different types of films. Also, his films, I think, if I understand it right. So it's not for me like a dogmatic rule to shot every scene in a long take. It's just... sometimes it's just in your imagination. You see it in a long take without an intellectual explanation for it. And sometimes it just fits the way you want to look at a thing or at a man or at a ritual, that you just want to give the viewer some time to look at the details of life instead of forcing meaning onto things with editing and stuff. I think editing is a very powerful and artistic tool, but maybe...
You think some movies are over edited, too many special effects, that kind of thing?
Yeah, or maybe a fast edit can be maybe very interesting if it's like with a sort of consciousness or a vision instead of just being like a box to dump your story in. But I hope people still are interested in using the language of cinema to generate a story or a feeling or
Now, we have had on this podcast everyone from the mayor of the city of Chicago, sitting right where you're sitting now, to actors and actresses in Broadway and Chicago, book authors, no matter who is here. I ask them all the following questions, and we'll just begin going around the table. Sam, what is the best job you've ever had?
I have to say it's working for the Chicago International Film Festival.
Somehow I thought you'd say
It sounds a little cheesy.
No, that's okay.
But it is true. I get to watch movies for a living. I watch between 500 and 700 feature films a year to come up with the selection for the Chicago Film Festival. I travel the world, go to film festivals, go to Cannes and Berlin every year to scout films, and then we get to bring these films to Chicago and introduce our audiences to the filmmakers. So it's a dream job.
So let me ask you a question about Cannes. We were just there. We were in the south of France. We went to Cannes. Film festival was not going on when we were there. And they've got this tourist thing. It's not even a red carpet. I think it's a green carpet or something. You know what I'm talking about? On these steps. And everyone poses for a picture on carpet. I don't get it. The town is nice enough. Is it really the big deal? But don't say it too loudly because you won an award at Cannes. But still, I'll ask, is it really the big deal?
Well, it is really the big deal because of the quality of the movies that they show there. So there's a lot of...
It's not because Tom Cruise shows up?
Well, I mean, that certainly helps, I think, for some people.
Yeah.
I'm personally a big Tom Cruise fan.
Okay.
But I will say it's the quality of the films they show is what makes it all a big deal. There's glitz and glamour that I could mostly care less about, but the cinema is so good. So,
all right, James, best job you ever had?
I mean, I don't know if I could call filmmaking a job because I'm not really making a lot of money. I mean, that would definitely be the thing. But if it's about sort of financial sort of support, it would definitely be teaching.
Yeah. Actually, how much money do you make? No, I won't ask that. But an independent filmmaker,
yeah.
How much money, broadly speaking, does one make or lose? How do you raise the funds to make the movie even?
Yeah, I mean, that's a long, long conversation. But ultimately, as far as making money or not making money, we don't make a lot. It's really tough. I mean, I really look at filmmaking as a privilege. It's really an art. And, you know, it's really difficult to make a lot of money in art, even though Hollywood is sort of a different piece in itself. And so... it's not a lot. It's a struggle and it's a challenge. You have to have a real commitment and love for the art, and that's the only reason I'm moving forward in this. I don't make movies thinking how much money am I going to make, and so you really have to go in with that attitude. Otherwise, it'll be really challenging.
It still costs money to make a movie, so
yeah. I've figured out a model basically to try to reduce that. That you know, coming back, I lived in LA for 20 years. When I came back,
you lived where?
In Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back to Chicago, the biggest challenge was, what is prohibiting filmmakers, independent filmmakers, young filmmakers, from telling their stories? And like everything in life and in the society we live in, it's money. And so my goal was, is there a way, or how can I eliminate the biggest obstacle that stands in the way of telling stories and making movies? And that's money. And so I've spent the last 16 years that I've been back trying to figure out how to make movies with very little to no money. And that's been the strategy.
Yeah, I think you're the guy that I saw standing with a tin can on Michigan Avenue asking people, I want to make a movie. So, Sven, the best job you've ever had?
Yeah, to be honest, for now being a filmmaker and also the first time in my life that I had a longer period that I can pay my rent off doing this thing, making films. So, for now, I'm very feeling honored and privileged that I can do that, yeah.
The worst job, Sven, you've ever had?
It was, I think, my English is terrible, but delivering newspapers in my small village. But it's not only one street, it was like a lot of farms that you had to bike for a couple of miles on Saturday morning. And when I got older, I'd start drinking a bit, and then with the hangover, always too late, so you get fines from the newspaper and this stuff.
They actually fine you if...
Kind of. They took some of your wage, yeah. Off,
really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, when things were not delivered also, yeah.
You know, so for people that still get newspapers in Chicago, you're lucky if it lands anywhere near your street, let alone in your yard,
I think.
The worst job that you've ever had?
The worst job I've had was probably my experience just working in the industry in Hollywood. I worked there during the sort of Harvey Weinstein era. There was just a lot of exploiting going on, and just the way they sort of treat people and the way that the industry was set up back then was just really challenging.
Is it a lot different today?
It is a lot different today.
Really?
I'm sure they have a lot of improvement to still make, but it's completely, completely different than what it was, at least when I was there.
But it's awfully hard to break in.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a very gatekeeper sort of oriented industry, but yeah.
Worst job you've ever had, Sam?
I worked at a big movie theater chain, which will remain nameless, and I worked during one of the Harry Potter midnight releases, and I was up, I was there until like 4 in the morning.
What did you do?
Making popcorn, and I ended the shift with oil burns all over my... Mm. arms because I had been making popcorn for so long.
Oh, no. What makes you the happiest, aside from... Do you eat popcorn today as a result of that experience?
Yeah, I actually don't. I've worked in a number of movie theaters. Like, when I was in high school and stuff, that was always my job, was a movie theater guy. So I don't... I have lost the taste for popcorn. I never eat it.
I understand that. What makes you the happiest? I know that answer is not popcorn.
Yeah, no, I would say, I mean, good cinema makes me the happiest, and good basketball makes me the happiest. I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, so when the Timberwolves do well, I'm happy.
You from there?
Yeah, I'm from the southwest suburbs of Minneapolis.
All right, James?
I know this sounds super whatever, but family, spending time with family. I mean, there's a sense of peace amidst all the sort of, like, ambitions and work and all the things. Like, just chilling out with my family, my daughter, my son, my wife is probably my favorite.
That's not a bad answer at all, at least if you want to stay married.
Yeah, I should have said my family. I said the Timberwolves.
The Timberwolves.
Hey, what does that say about him, huh? Sven.
Having a Stella Artois with some friends in the bar or at home or outside when the sun is shining.
Or delivering newspapers.
Yeah, well, not that.
No, not that.
In company of some people that I know already for some time. It's not about the beer. It's more about the company, and then the beer helps. But, yeah, I enjoy that a lot.
It certainly does. What's the best thing for you, Sven, about Chicago? How many days, weeks have you been here?
I arrived yesterday late in the evening. And
are you jet-lagged?
I was jet-lagged, so I woke up at like 6, so I was on the street at 7. So seeing the city getting awake was nice, and taking the brown line and just seeing the city was amazing, actually. And then I went to Kimball and got off there, and then I was like in a part of town that they said was like nothing happening there, and there was not much. Still, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right. Sounds like you were in Ravenswood, maybe? I'm not sure. Yeah, that's probably so. About right. Yeah. Yeah. So what surprises you, if anything, about Chicago, Sven?
Maybe that it feels very business orientated, but maybe this is not true. But it feels like in the center that I'm in a business kind of area, but I don't know if it's true.
Maybe because of where you are now, we're in the loop.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of businesses here, but
yeah, I didn't saw it was so many skyscrapers and tall buildings, to be honest.
Yeah, but we have more than any other city on the planet.
Oh, really?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And the original skyscraper came from here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes
James.
Sense.
About Chicago, best thing.
Best thing. I mean, you know, the arts, the architecture, just the people. I mean, the lake. I just love that it's like this hidden gem in the United States, where people just think about New York and L.A., and we have this little sort of secret in the middle of the country that I get to call home, and that's so rich with all the things that those two other cities have. That nobody knows about. And I just love sort of the quietness of that, despite how big and diverse and all the options that we have here.
Now, I have a hunch, Sam, you might say to this question, the answer, best thing about Chicago is a certain film festival.
It is. The best thing about Chicago is this time in October, the leaves are turning, it's beautiful outside, and the Chicago International Film Festival has just started, and we're playing the best movies in the world. It's the
you
best
are.
Thing about the city.
And the website for people who want to learn more?
It's at chicagofilmfestival.com. You can search by film, you can search by day, so if you just have a free day and want to go see something, you can go look up all the films that are screening that day, and you can buy tickets right on our website.
And the great thing about podcasts is people can be listening 3 months from now, and it's way past October, it's January, but you can make plans for the following year because there will be yet another one, as there is every year.
Yep, for eternity, I think. Chicago International will outlast us all, I'm positive.
How many theaters do the movies from all over the world play at?
So we show at the AMC New City, at the Music Box Theater, at the Gene Siskel Film Center, at Kennedy King College, at the National Museum of Mexican Art, at the Logan Center for the Arts, and at the Chicago History Museum. So I wasn't counting while I was rattling those off. But
you did it all from the top of your head. I'm impressed with that.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much. Good luck for you for the Academy Award. And by the way, when you're up there accepting, I know you'll say, if it wasn't for the podcast I did at Pedrino's restaurant, this never would have happened.
This is the first American publicity, so maybe it's honest to just call your name then.
Think so. Hey, guys, thank you very much from Pedrino's restaurant.
Yeah, thank you.
That's a wrap from Booth 46 at Pedrino's, where the loop comes to life. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep the conversation going and keep exploring Chicago.